Next step number 541, October 18th, 2018. Relationships between things, between objects, between people, and events. We're going to be looking at how these all connect together, as well as some of the metaphysical backings that go with all of our life. This is Father Voskan. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church, looking at life through the most ancient of all Christian fabrics, namely Armenian Orthodoxy. This Armadox look is yours for the taking, so do it with us right now as we take the next step.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. What you're about to listen to is an episode of The Next Step with Father Voskan. Here, Father Voskan provides a very distinctive and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by our Lord Jesus Christ. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, to disenfranchise members of the church community, and of course the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. So we invite you to turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
1357. You ever play one of those games where they say, what's the next number in this sequence? Even before it was a game, it was part of your early math testing, right? 1, 3, 5, 7. What's the next number in the series? Well, you figure it out. These are all odd numbers. They're separated by one digit. So it's the first number plus 2, right? 1 plus 2 equals 3. 3 plus 2 equals 5. 5 plus 2 equals 7. So therefore, the next number has to be 9, right? 7 plus 2. So you figured out the string of numbers. What you're really figuring out is not so much what the next number is. What the real question is, what is the relationship between these numbers, right? That's what it's about. It's connecting the dots between these numbers. Some of them are real hard. Some tests are very hard, you know. 503, 509, 521, and 523, what's the next number? You go, what? Wait. No relation? Well, yeah, of course they have relation. Sometimes you have to look really, really deep. 503, 509, 521, 523 are all prime numbers, and they are in a series, and the next one is 541. You're going to have to really, really sweat to get that answer. Sometimes they're very easy. Sometimes, wow, they're really out there. It takes a while to know what these are. How would you know the prime numbers after 500, for instance? And not all of it is about math. I mean, there's lists, there's different lists, and your challenge is to find the object in the list. Again, it's not so much about finding the next object as it is what is the relationship. Here's a list of items. What about this, okay? Violet, indigo, blue, green, yellow, orange. What's the next one? Well, now, if you kind of know the colors of the rainbow, if you've studied that, or if you've learned it, and sometimes it's in a silly little song that we learn in kindergarten or somewhere in our elementary education career, you know that the last color is red, and so you'd say red, but again, it's what is the relationship between each of those items in the list. They are colors of the rainbow. There is a spectrum of colors. How about this one? Eisenhower, Nixon, Ford, Reagan. Well, the first thing you would figure out is, okay, these are all presidents of the United States. So now you know that they are presidents, but there's a reason why not all presidents are in this list. Let's listen to it again. Eisenhower, Nixon, Ford, Reagan. The next one would be Bush, right? Because on closer inspection, you'd realize they're all presidents. They all happen to be Republican presidents in order of election. So it'd be Eisenhower, Nixon, Ford, Reagan, and Bush. Right? You get it, right? Okay. Now here's the tough one. And why I'm doing this on today's next step. It's important. And I'm all about connecting dots, but when the dots are so obvious, we've got to take advantage. And it's in connecting those dots and finding those relationships that we understand what our faith is all about. We understand what we're doing is all about. So let me give you a list right now. I'm telling you, a little bit tougher, okay? Misrob Mashtots, Yerishe, Moses the poet, David the invincible philosopher, Gregory of Nodig, and Nerses of Gala. Okay, let me give them to you in Armenian. Maybe that'll help, okay? I don't know. It might, okay? Mesrob Vartabed or Mesrob Vartabedi. Yerishe, Moses Kertoch, David Anhacht Pilisopa, Krikor Naregatsi, Nerses Shnorhali. What do these people have in common? What's the thread that unites them? What is the relationship between them? Yeah, I'd love to ask the next question, of course. What is the next one in line? Because that's really the ultimate question, where we need to go with the next step. But let's back up. What is the relationship between this? What is the pattern? Whereas we looked at a pattern of 1, 3, 5, 7, you knew that they were odd numbers, the first odd numbers in the whole number sequence, separated by one other digit, et cetera, et cetera. What can you say about this group of people that I just listed off? And here's a hint. They're not contemporaries. They did not live at the same time. So you can't say, like, you know, hey, this is a group of people who fought the Civil War or anything like that, okay? These people that I just listed off are recognized in the Armenian Church as the Holy Translators. The thread that unites them is the word translator. They are considered Tzirpots Tarkmanshats, the holy translators. Now, listen why this is so fantastic, why it's a mind-blower. They are not contemporaries. They didn't even know each other, but the church recognizes them as a whole. Think about the Armenian martyrs of the genocide. They're basically all contemporaries, people that lived from the mid-1800s to 1915, 1923, people who were slaughtered, who were martyred during the genocide. So you could lump them together and you could say this group of saints belongs to the Armenian people. They lived in a certain period of time. They witnessed the same atrocities, etc., etc. There's a set of givens that you could ascribe to them. In the case of the Holy Translators, nothing. They are not connected by when they lived, when they inhabited space and time. They are not collected by language, by faith, yet they're regarded as the Holy Translators. Well, I say that because of faith. For instance, one of the people in there, fascinating character, David the Invincible, David Anhacht Pilisopa, David the Invincible philosopher, who was so great philosophically, he could have these debates with the greatest of the Greeks, and he would always come out a winner. That it wasn't the Armenians that identified him as David the Invincible, it was the Greeks that gave him that name, David Anhacht, David the Invincible. Nerses of Gala, Nerses Shnorhali, big patriarch, 12th century saint, compared to Mesrob Mashtots from the 5th century, gave us the alphabet, the Holy Translators. That's what connects them. They are the Holy Translators. What is translator? Somebody who takes something and makes it understandable, who takes something that is difficult to understand and makes it understandable. For instance, the easiest idea of translation comes to us because of in the category of language, right? And we're all familiar with this, with the translators. we see it all the time, right? United Nations, or when high-level dignitaries communicate with one another. You'll see one having a headset, and one is talking in one language, the other one is hearing in his own language, and they communicate back and forth by translators. That's a translator of language. United Nations, right? The ambassador is sitting there, and she gets her input via the translating devices that are on their heads. I just thought of it, you know, back in Glendale when I was the parish priest there, we used to have translate, because there was such a small group of people that spoke English. What we did is I'd have to give my sermons in Armenian over there. And it was always interesting because never could figure that out. I did the 13 years over there. We'd give the sermons in Armenian and we'd have translating. And we had this one gentleman who donated these radio devices. They were really cool too. So as you came into the church, well, the first times we tried it, we had people say, I had to ask the congregation. I'd ask the congregation, how many of you do not understand Armenian? And of course, we didn't get too many people raising their hands. Then we realized that people were intimidated to raise their hand. You know, you got a packed church and you're going to raise your hand and say, I don't understand Armenian. So to avoid that intimidation, what we did is we made these little devices available when you first walked into the church. The parish council would hand it out. So you'd have this little device and you'd turn it on. And during the sermon, I'd give the sermon in Armenian. And then it was translated simultaneously. We had some incredible translators at that time. Simultaneously, one of them was my sister, which was probably one of the best. Excuse me to the others, and Susie, I know did some of them, but Anush, my sister, got it because she knew my nuances. She knew when I was leading up to something. But I have to tell you that all of the translators, really, people would just love it. They'd take these little devices, but then eventually it got into some of the usual stuff that prohibits us from moving forward. It got into some of, I don't want to use the word politics in its true sense, but it had the politics of the inside of the church, Armenian versus English and so on and so on. But these translators were really very, very useful in conveying the thought. Because on the outside, they translated from Armenian to English, but deep down, it's taking something that is ununderstandable, not understandable, and making it understandable for the masses. Taking something that is complex and really simplifying it. And really, isn't that what science teaches us, too? It's the order of the universe, that we want to absolve chaos. You want to go from chaos to the ordered. Yes, of course. From chaos, from the madness, you want to get to order. That's what translators do. Yes, they bring order. They bring a type of system to play. And yes, language is probably the most obvious way, or the biggest tool of translating things, but there's so many other ways. And when you look at this list, Mesrop, for instance, he was the one who invented alphabet. So yes, connected to the language, but an actual means by which that language is conveyed in writing. It's codified, and then it becomes a way that people can read, write. And actually, right after Mesrop translated the Bible into Armenian, Armenia experienced what's called the Golden Century, Vosketar. It experienced the golden century of literature. There was so much literature coming out and just beautiful, beautiful writings. Poetry. History. So once you have those, the alphabet, you're able to document stories in the language that is understandable. David, we already talked about him, Cricor Naregatsi. Well, you know, Armenians get really excited because the Roman Catholic Church, a couple years ago, officially accepted him, is that the term? Or officially named Gregory of Narek as one of the doctors of the church. That from time zero till right now, there's only been 36. He's the 36th doctor of the church. And by doctor, it means he expounds the faith of the church. Well, Naregatsi was one of the saints. Long before he became a doctor in the Catholic world, he was one of the revered saints that has been, let's see, for the Armenian people, I could say his writings, his lamentations are on par with the Bible. I know, yeah. I know people are going to say, what? No, you can't touch the Bible. Nobody's touching the Bible. Take a chill pill, okay? Nobody's touching the Bible, but Naregatsi's works, his prayers were so powerful that even till today, people hang on to the words. I mean, on our Monday night Questions and Faith series, our Vesper services usually end with one of Naregatsi's prayers because they are so powerful. Written centuries ago, they speak to the soul today. They're timeless, right? Timeless prayers. And it's really, next to the Bible, his Book of Lamentations among the Armenian people is the most important book. And I always tell people, read the book. Most people buy it and they put it next to sick people. They buy the book and then they put it under their pillow. And that's cute, right? What happens when you put it under your pillow? You wake up with a stiff neck. You know, you don't want to do that. You want to take the book out and read it. And the Lamentations are not easy. They are not easy to read. But once you get into them, you realize this man was true mystic. He was away. He was separated from this world. And you start understanding what Jesus meant by concepts. I am of this world. I am not of this world. The kingdom of heaven is within and without you. Fascinating stuff. But it takes time to digest. It takes time to understand. A few years ago, there was a English translation of Naregatsi, and I'll make sure that there's a link on today's show notes. I know it's available on the web, not the book. I know that the translation is available on the web, but the book might be too. So let me do a little bit of thank you. Okay, Susie will take care of it. So there'll be a link on today's show notes to Naregatsi. And then the last one. St. Nerses Shnorhali of Gala. St. Nerses. Here's the ultimate translator who took the complex and simplified it, who shared the creative spirit, his poetry, his songs, his writings. He has written a book that tells priests how they should act. He has written a general letter to the public how the Christian should act. This is 12th century. He was the Catholicos, the head of the Armenian church. He was a writer extraordinaire. He was a poet. He was a musician. In fact, today's song, we're going to take Aravod Luso. And, you know, for instance, Aravod Luso, 36 verses, each verse starting with a letter of the Armenian alphabet, expressing the theology of the church. Nora Sterzial, one of the fun things, the hidden code in Nerses Shnorhali songs is to try to find that code. And for instance, Nora Sterzial, the song of the new day, of the new creation. You look at that and you read each of the verses. They start off with a letter of his name. So as you're reading or as you're singing the entire hymn, Nerses Shnorhali is there, is present, the creator of these verses. It's fascinating, fascinating. Stuff that you just wouldn't find elsewhere. You remember a couple weeks ago I shared with you about Enoch and Elijah from the Requiem service. There's like so much stuff that is just hidden, that is hidden and waiting for us to find. And you're finding it here, right? A few minutes we'll hear Aravot Lousseau. But before doing that, let me wrap this up, this segment. We're talking about connecting the dots, about translators, about simplifying, about bringing order to chaos. That's what the translators do. They take something that is complex and they simplify it. Now, just as I asked you at the beginning of this segment, 1, 3, 5, 7, what is the next number? Let me ask you this. Mesrop, Yerishem, Moses, David, Grigor, Nerses. Who is the next person in that segment? That's the question that I leave you with, because that's where our calling has to be. The calling to take something. Once you know it, once you know Christ in your life, once you have that message, it behooves you to share it. And that sharing is not just to get out there and talk about it. Each of these translators did it in their own way. They shared it through their writings, through their words, and of course, through their actions. Very important that there are many ways that we can translate. We are called to that translation by virtue of these people being saints in our lives. The saints are there to inspire us, for us to see as people they rose to the occasion, as human beings, as flesh and blood, they rose to the occasion and were able to transmit, to simplify something that was complex. We're going to take our break right now and play the song of the day. Today we're going to feature one of St. Nerses Shnorali's compositions, Aravot Lousseau. And we're dedicating it today to Diramair Findikian, our dear friend, Father Daniel Findikian, the primate of the Eastern Diocese, lost his mother just a few days ago. Diramair Findikian, her loss, as any mother, is tremendous, because think about it. Connect the dots here. Mothers, what are they? They're the translators for our lives, right? They take the complex and they simplify it. They give their care, their warmth. They take what we cannot comprehend, what we cannot understand, and filter it down and make it very easy for us to survive. Diramair Findikian. In Armenian week, we refer to the priest's mother as Diramair, the mother of the priest. And we dedicate this to her and offer our condolences to Father Daniel, to the entire family. As we listen to Aravot Lousseau, Lucine Zakarian, one of the extremely beautiful voices of the Armenian Church. Fortunately, we have these recordings. We've played Lucine Zakarian through the years here on this program, through the 11 years we've been on. We've never featured this song. It goes with a small quartet that she sings with on this particular recording, Aravot Lousseau.
Thank you.
We're talking about translators today, and we heard Lucine Zakarian, a translator of sorts, right? She translated. She took that song and she translated it to us, taking the complex and simplifying it. One of the big translators, Nerse Şnorhali, writing that in the 12th century, Aravodluso, Morning Light, 36 verses corresponding to the 36 letters of the Armenian alphabet. We're talking about simplifying, about taking the complex, about translating. And so the song, Aravodluso, Morning Light, comes to us sung by the unmistakable voice of Lucine Zakarian, the late and great Lucine Zakarian, sung at the Holy Etchmiadzin Cathedral. That's what the liner notes on this CD do say. We will put a link on today's show notes, and with a dedication to mothers, and especially to a very special mother, Diramayr Fındıkyan, whose passing we mark this week, with our condolences offered to Father Daniel Fındıkyan, the primate of the Eastern Diocese. May God rest her soul. May we be reminded of the gentleness of mothers, especially Diramayr, who follow in the footsteps of translators and give us this opportunity to take the complex and simplify in our lives. God rest her soul. I don't know if you had a chance to watch it or listen to it, but if not, we're going to have a cleaner version of it for you next week on next week's Next Step. But last week, I participated in A New World, Abrahamic Faiths, Hopes for Salvation. And what an experience it was. It was at the Adventist Church. Got a chance to learn a little bit about them, about this denomination that sometimes goes unnoticed. They're so small, but let me share with you a couple insights that I pulled away that I want to share with you today. And then, like I said, next week, on next week's show, we will have the speech in its entirety recorded, and Ken was completely busy, couldn't get around to actually putting it together. He promised by next week we will have the recording. But I was at the Glendale City Church run by the Adventists. And here was an interesting thing. We were talking about peace, about hope, about salvation, about opportunities that the world itself is looking towards. And of course, those of you who followed the Next Step know where I come from in Armadoxy. Rather than taking an eschatological view of that, you know, we're in end times, it's actually to just kind of dismiss that we're in end times, because it's something that is relegated to God the Father. Let God deal with timetables, and let us deal with where we are in life. And in fact, that became the focus of my speech. Coming from the Christian perspective, I said that, you know, ours is not to know those times, whether, you know, the end of the world comes today, tomorrow, in 100 years, you're not going to argue with God. You can't sit down with God and say, well, wait a minute, according to my calculations, this wasn't supposed to happen for another couple weeks. What are you going to do? You know, it's like, and it kind of goes against what Christ is saying. Do not be anxious about tomorrow. So I came with this message about what the Armenian Church presents. And the Armenian Church presentation is interesting. It comes to us from the Sunday of Advent. In our church, during the Lenten cycle, there is one Sunday that is dedicated to the second coming of Christ. And as I've shared with you many times, if you want to know what the church fathers are thinking, what the lesson is for that particular day, you look at the scriptural passages that they've given us. And when you look on the day of Advent, the day dedicated to the second coming of Christ, it's interesting that there is no mention about the second coming in the readings. In the reading, rather, we read from Matthew chapter 22. Interesting, right? Not about the second coming. It's about, well, Jesus professing the first and foremost commandment. The Pharisees are trying to trick him, and they ask him, what is the most important commandment? What is the best? What is the top commandment in Scripture? Thinking that Jesus might say, you know, do not lie. That's a pretty important one. Honor your parents. That's a good one, right? How about do not murder? That's the most important one. And Jesus just flips it around and gives this answer that you can't imagine, because everything else falls on this answer. He says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments, everything is based. And sure enough, yeah, if you love God, then you don't kill, right? If you love God, then you don't lie. So obviously, it's the groundwork. And my point there is that why would our church fathers offer us this passage on the Sunday of Advent? Well, because while we're so busy thinking about a second coming, hey, back up a little bit. Hold your horses, so to speak. How about the first coming? How about focusing in on the first coming of Christ? And that's what I shared with them, and you'll hear the entire thing next week. But here's a couple insights that I wanted to share. The Adventist Church. Advent means the second coming. They are concerned with the second coming. They have studies, and they look at the second coming. And hence, that was the reason why they had this series with an imam from Islam, me from the Christian perspective, and they have a rabbi coming in this week talk about Judaism, about issues of the second coming. And so I approached it in the way that I believe, that is true to the Armenian Orthodox tradition. Second coming will happen, but for right now you need to focus in on the first coming, the words of the first coming. Second, Seventh-day Adventist. Here's an interesting one. Seventh day. During the question and answer period, by the way, both my lecture is on their Facebook page. Their Facebook page is City Church, Glendale City Church. My lecture's there, and the question and answers are there. So you can hear question and answer. They had people calling in. They had people actually texting in. So it was an interesting Q&A session. But I want to share with you a couple questions, because these were ones that spoke to my heart. That I wanted. I said, wow, these are important. One of them came from a young little boy. And he happened to be there. I didn't see him at first. I thought that it was somebody who had written in. So I didn't see the little boy until afterwards. I met him during the luncheon. Little boy said, if God is really powerful and God can do everything, why isn't he just coming right now? Why didn't he just come and just stop all these wars and all these horrible things that are happening? And I approached it because I didn't see him there. I gave him an answer that, you know, we've got to stop thinking about God as this superhuman person, the Superman figure. In fact, I went a little bit more and said he's not Santa Claus. Santa Claus rewards the good people with gifts and punishes the bad people with lumps of coal. But God is not a Santa Claus. And so sometimes it appears that good people get punished, and it appears that bad people are getting the breaks, when in fact it's not really God, but that is just the system of the universe. And I'm sure you can understand how this is very confusing, especially because we grew up with the Santa Claus myth. That, you know, Santa Claus does that. He knows if you've been naughty or nice, right? He knows if you've been a good boy, a bad girl, right? Whatever you do. There's like a list. He checks it twice. And then, accordingly, he gives out gifts. And we transfer this image to God because we have this image that God is this big Santa Claus that takes care of us the way Santa does. Okay, so I asked him to think in different terms. I asked him, what would happen if he got rid of the bad people right now and everybody was good, how would they stay good? Well, because they would do what God wants them to do. I said, exactly. I said, that's called free will. In other words, we have the will to do whatever we want. Now listen to this, okay? This is really, really important. We as human beings are created in the image of God, meaning that we have the ability to create, to make our destiny, that there really is no destiny. It's up to us. We determine it according to our free will. And this is where we get into some of the metaphysical issues, right? Free will, destiny, the primal questions, right? What are we here for? Who determines these things? And I asked this boy, I said, what if we couldn't do what we wanted? If we just did whatever God told us to do, what would we be? We'd be robots. And he laughed. And yeah, it does sound funny, doesn't it? But that's what a robot is. A robot is programmed to do what the programmer says it will do. So you can build a machine today. Today, we have the resources. You can build a machine that will do what you tell it to do. And you tell it to walk a mile, it'll walk a mile. You tell it to pick up a glass of water and hand it to you, it'll do that. Now here's the thing. That's not somebody you can love. That's a machine. And God doesn't want machines. God loves us and he creates us. That's part of the system. Part of the system is that we have the opportunity to accept him or to reject him. Part of the system is that we create our lives. And some people do good. Some people create bad things. Some people don't do it bad things because they want to do bad, but it just turns out that way. You think about all the people that have brought diseases into the light, into the world. It's not because they wanted to bring diseases, but you know the pollution levels have gotten higher because of automation, because we've moved towards a different society and so on and so on. Now we're just starting to feel the effects of how the world has changed. Look at what's happening right now with people, social media, people with their heads on a screen. I mean, the latest statistics are that it's an absurd number of young people who would rather text rather than talk. So our communication skills are dwindling. And of course, you know, you can blame people for that, but you can also say that we all have the free will to opt for that or not to opt for that. And then there's a correction that takes place. You start criticizing, and then as a human being, you start thinking about it, and you say, well, this is for me, this isn't for me, I'll do this and I'll do that. But that's part of the free will that we have. And so explained in terms of we are not robots, this young man, he liked that answer. And it gave him a chance to think about it. And that's what we do. We give a chance for people to think about these concepts. Remember, I've shared that with you with the koans, the questions that come to us. Zen Buddhism, you know. What is the sound of one hand clapping? It's not a question for you to answer. It's not for you to take your hand and start hitting it with your fingers, hitting your palm with the fingers of that same hand and saying, this is the sound. No, it's not about that. We're not looking for the answer to that. But it can be. Obviously, in Zen, yes, if that's what you do, that is also, at the moment, that's what it is. That there's a Zen answer, too. You know, but the idea is to think about it. What is that sound? What is the sound of one hand clapping? And you start thinking about it. In the same way, all of these things, these are metaphysical questions. Are we programmed to do good? Are we programmed to do evil? And then, just as I finished with this young boy, I get home, I get through the weekend. We had a beautiful divine liturgy out there in Thousand Oaks. We celebrated together with the Merhuis. We had a family baptism. I mean, it was just beautiful and everything. Monday morning, I listened to my podcast during my walk. I'm listening to my set of podcasts, one of which pops up. It's by Neil deGrasse Tyson. I said, this sounds interesting. What does he talk about? He talks about free will. Uh-huh. The scientist talking about free will. And then he says, and he brings in some neuroscientist who comes in and talks about the neurons in our brain. We are basically, it's an illusion that we have free will. That basically you can predict based on a set of factors, you can predict what somebody's going to say. So all of a sudden we realize, hey, maybe we are created as robots. And then if that's not enough, we go to a clergy conference that happens to be on Monday. We had some huge storms over here, wind storms. And so our clergy conference was canceled, but I was in charge of bringing the speaker. The speaker, just a fascinating human being, Dr. Lucas Alexanian, who is the head of psychiatry here at Glendale Adventist Hospital. And he had some insight about mental health. And we started talking about free will. And all of a sudden, what does he talk about? He talks about the neurons that connect different receptors in our head. And where is the mind? Where is the soul? Is it in the head, in the brain? Just fascinating. So all these things are just kind of like coming together, and I'm getting excited about it because that's my excitement, you know? Whereas Saturday, we talk with a little boy about free will and determinism. By Monday, it's already blown out into all sides of the universe with Neil deGrasse Tyson, with this physician talking to our clergy. Oh, yes, he spoke to the clergy group about mental health, about some of the difficulties that we have within our parishes with people with mental health and knowing when to ask for assistance. So it was just a very fascinating weekend that kind of unfolded, and I needed to share that with you. So one of the other things at the Adventist event was that somebody asked a question, what about the Sabbath? Now, here's the big one, okay? And I didn't realize how big it was. Of course, Seventh-day Adventist. These are the two prime the prime topics in their faith. One is that the seventh day is holy, the Sabbath. God created the heavens and the earth in 6 days. The seventh day he rested. And it is on Saturdays, on the Sabbath, that they have their worship service. So the challenge was to me, why do we not observe the Sabbath? And we celebrate our liturgy on Sunday. And I took a step back and I said, well, it's probably because it's been miscommunicated. We have not, Sunday for us, Sunday in Armenian Orthodoxy is not the new Sabbath. Sabbath in Armenian is Shabbat. It is the same word. The Sabbath is Shabbat. And it is a day of reverence. It is a day of rest. Sunday that we get to is the new day, the day of creation. It is the day of the resurrection that we celebrate. The divine liturgy on Sunday mornings is not about to do away with the Sabbath. It's to remember the resurrection of Christ, which was on the new day on Sunday. Norasterdial. Yeah, wow. Connected to the first part of our show too. See how dots always just connect? It's just a wonder, isn't it? And somebody's going to one day dissect these podcasts and just say, wow, how did that all happen? I don't know how it happens, but it all connects. And so here we are. We are celebrating on Sunday. So afterwards, one of the organizers came up to me and says, that answer was brilliant. I said, well done. And nothing new. I mean, this is what we do. It's like the Shabbat is the Sabbath, but Sunday is the day of the resurrection. He said, because that is such a big issue among the Adventists, the Seventh-day Adventists. And he says, and you just like diffused what could have been a big problem. Well, mine wasn't to diffuse. It was just to really explain and express what we believe. Now, if we can diffuse in the meantime, great, great. No one's there to pick fights. So that was another interesting one. And then the final one that I just need to share with you is somebody during the question and answers asked about, is peace really achievable? How can, when we have so many different denominations, so many different religions, is peace really a place where we can, how can we cultivate it? And I have to go back and listen to the questions because it's an interesting question as well as an answer. But I want to share with you the answer that was given. Talked about the Adventists. If you notice, Adventists are very big on medicine. They have hospitals right here in Southern California. They have their university at Loma Linda. These are places where healthcare is promoted. And he expressed that healthcare is the one place where we are all human. It's the bottom line. It's the great connector. It's not about what faith you are. It's not about what color you are, what's your background, but that you are hurting and that you need care. And so in that sense, the Seventh-day Adventists, through their extensive connections in the healthcare world, are able to promote the peace that we so often talk about. And that was beautiful. That was really beautiful. So that's what happened at that event. And like I said, the following day was just beautiful. We had a chance to be with the Medhuis, our hope, House of Hope. That's what it's called in Armenia. We're looking forward to visiting the House of Hope next week when we are out there in Armenia. But I will put links on today's show notes so you could check out what happened and some of the highlights of these events. With that, let's take a little break right now. Let Susie fill you in on what's going on, and I'll be back in a couple moments.
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. Since 2008, we have been providing quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. To become part of this dynamic ministry, please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org website and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Please accept our heartfelt appreciation. Thanks for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazquez.
Thank you, Susie, for that announcement. And thank you to our dear listeners for all your support, for your prayers, and for your emails, your messages. We love getting them all. And I've got to promise you that I will get to them. Sometimes it seems like a while till I get back. It's because there's so many things. I am so backlogged right now. We've got a big trip coming up. So just bear with us. We have some personal issues that are going on. But I promise we'll get back to everybody. And if it's gotten really too long, don't hesitate to drop us another line, because we always like hearing from you. But we will get to everybody who has dropped us a line. And apologies if it sometimes seems like a long time. We have a few things coming up on the calendar. We should be in Armenia shortly and celebrating over there at the Mother See. And one of the things that I do when we get to Holy Etchmiadzin is to offer prayers. And I do remember all of our listeners, all of you, in my prayers at the Holy See. It's a very special place, I know, for Armenians, for me personally, because it was there that I received my background, where I received my education at the monastery of Holy Etchmiadzin. And there's a certain holiness that I feel just in that space, especially when you see the Ichman Sehan, where St. Gregory sees the vision of Christ coming down and pointing to the four corners where his church, the Church of the Armenian People, will be built. To go there, to reconnect with that is a very, very special moment in my life. And I take you with me. I take you in my prayers, and be certain of that. And I hope you feel the energy, and I hope you feel the blessings coming from Holy Etchmiadzin. On top of that, we will be at St. James in Los Angeles. I believe they're celebrating their... Actually, November is going to be a double St. James, or in November 4th, we'll be at St. James, Sacramento, California, for Divine Liturgy. On the weekend of the 10th, we'll be at St. James, Los Angeles, for the 75th anniversary of that church that, well, was my church growing up. So it's a very special place for me, and... going to share with you some insights on that as we get closer. Like I said, next week we will have the speech in its entirety from the Adventist event about a new world, Abrahamic faiths. Aside from that, we'd always love to hear from you. Please drop us a line at feedback@epostle.net and connect with us on social media, whether you tweet, whether you Instagram, you Facebook, we're all over the place, and we'd love to hear. I want to thank you for joining us today. I hope you enjoyed today's show as much as we enjoyed connecting the dots with you. On behalf of the wonderful crew that put today's show together, Ken, our technical director, Susie, our producer, this is Father Baskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Off, but I'm top limits.